He's Jim Browdy.
And she's Marjorie Egan.
And this is Boston Public Radio.
89.7 WGBH, WGBH HD1 Boston.
Online at WGBHnews.org.
Boston's local NPR. Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. I'm Jim Browdy. She's Marjorie Egan. Here with us in Studio 3 to take on the moral dilemmas of the day are Reverend Irene Monroe and Reverend Emmett Price. Reverend Monroe is a syndicated religion columnist, and Reverend Price is a professor of music at Northeastern University. Good to see you both.
Hey, thanks for having us
back.
Great
to be now, here on Marathon Monday.
Exactly. Before we start, Marjorie, I'd like to hold you up, some exhibits that Irene has brought in today. Now,
exhibits. That's right.
This is she was at the expo for the marathon. What is this a photo of, please?
It is yet another picture of Jim Browdy finishing the New York City marathon.
But no, Irene, statement though.
It says I ran a half marathon. Sounds so much better than I quit halfway through a marathon. That's not true. Thank you. Now, what would this be, Marjorie? What would that be a photo of? Thank you.
That's another picture of Jim doing his workout.
Thank you very
much. And what does the statement
say, though? You're really buttering him up.
I know where this is going. I've been listening today.
And what is this one? Go Team Jim and Marjorie. This is actually a picture of me finishing a marathon and a picture of you with me in your bicycle basket as E.T.
How did I know that I would need to take multiple pictures of myself years ago for this
Before
day
we get
today.
Started, Irene, can I ask you a question?
Sure.
You were able to find pictures of me finishing a marathon. Is that correct, yes or no?
Oh, my goodness.
No, it's a yes or no question.
Yes, indeed.
Okay, fine. Now, how many photographs, because you don't have any here, how many photographs of Marjorie finishing a marathon were you able to secure? How many?
Well, I didn't look hard enough. How
Apparently
about that,
not.
Marjorie?
I don't think I took any pictures.
But I just need to say that there are a lot of unflattering photos of Jim. A tsunami of them.
Fine. Emma, I'd like you, before we get started, I'd like you to read one number on the air, please. Okay. First of all, why don't you read Marjorie's finish? Oh, she doesn't have any with her. Why don't you read? What does that say in that little circle there?
3 hours, 39 minutes, and 56 seconds.
And what name is that right there?
The 1981 Browdy. New York City.
Browdy.
Yeah, Browdy. That's
Thank
great.
You. Yep,
okay,
yep. Okay.
So can I tell you what my New York time was?
No, I don't really care.
Yeah,
you were a track star. You were
a track star.
2:59:03.
Is that really true?
2:59:03.
You were a track star. Weren't you a big track star?
Yeah, that's right.
So you ran like 5 minute miles, correct?
And ran it my sophomore year. At Wellesley.
Did you really?
That's right. But that was a three hour, and I think that was 3:25 or something like that. But that was my first
one. You were hurting.
Oh, painfully so. Yeah. Painfully
By the way, and thank you for bringing us goodies from the Marathon Expo.
Oh, thank the Expo.
So
all these freebies.
Before we move on, what was the previous time?
2:59.
So you were just a few seconds under 3.
So you were running
absolutely
5 minute miles.
And if I had not blown out my knee, perhaps you would have heard of me.
Wow. Look at her. That is very impressive.
Okay, for starters, though, getting back to the semi-real world, let's listen to Barack Obama expressing some frustration about a particular nomination that, as of the moment, is not going very far. Here's the president.
It's gone too far. Enough. Enough. Call Loretta Lynch for a vote. Get her confirmed. Put her in place. Let her do her job. This is embarrassing. A process like this.
You know, I didn't see that statement. I obviously just heard it along with you. The president never sounds angry, which some people have criticized him for. He actually sounds angrier. First African-American nominee to be attorney general, Loretta Lynch, has been held up for week after week after week after week because apparently there's some dispute about a provision that relates to abortion in this sex trafficking bill. So what do you make of this, Emmett Price?
Well, I mean, this is horrible because the holdup has absolutely nothing to do with her. I mean, we're in 5 months in from when she was nominated on November 8th, and she's still not seated yet. And this is absolutely politics, not as usual. It used to be partisan politics, but this is not even partisan politics. This is personal now.
That's
right. I mean, this is, really Mitch McConnell and the Senate essentially holding back the opportunity for this very skilled, this very proven,
flawless
this very trusted person.
They've approved
candidate.
Her before.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Two times.
Yeah. But, you know, I've read a lot of accounts, Irene Monroe, say this is about race. I don't think it's about race at all. I think
it's about Barack Obama. So if it's about Barack Obama,
there's that
component.
I meant about the race of the nominee.
Oh, no, I really
I mean,
don't.
If it was a white guy he had nominated for Attorney General.
I don't think it's that. But how it becomes racialized is simply because last month you had about 20 African-American women who went to Capitol Hill to protest the slow walking and stalling of her confirmation outside of Senator McConnell's office. This Wednesday, there will be African-American men who will go to Capitol Hill. It becomes racialized because I really felt like, particularly with the women, I was looking for a sisterhood of many women in support of Loretta Lynn. So that's how it becomes racialized. And
well,
now,
also because it's disrespecting a black woman.
Yeah,
I mean, in a way that's taken a new threshold of disrespect.
They said this is a Rosa Parks example.
Yeah,
she's
but this is disrespecting
to sit
the
in
American
the
people. I mean, for you to have somebody who is the existing Attorney General to be seated, held hostage.
U.S. Attorney,
held hostage
for nearly six months
by the Senate. I mean, it's absurd.
And the interesting thing is, I thought they would move expeditiously on Loretta Lynn, largely because they can't stand her. So I don't understand the logic behind it. But now hunger strikes are going on, and your boy Sharpton is orchestrating.
Your high school classmate, yeah.
He's lost a lot of weight. He better not go on a hunger strike. There's not much left of him.
You're absolutely right. But I did hear that Harry Reid was going to force a vote because you have sort of like 46. Democrats that definitely will vote for, and we need about four or five.
Well, I don't know procedurally. I thought you need 60 to do virtually anything here, but I'm not sure how close it is. In any case, so the Lynch nominee. I think the most important part is the President of the United States is angry.
Yes,
I have to say, and
we've never seen that.
I've been
before.
Looking. Well, no, I think a lot of people have been looking for it, and I think it's not a bad subject matter. Can we go to another situation? Go ahead, Marjorie. I'm sorry.
Yeah, down in North Charleston, South Carolina, everybody knows a terrible story about Walter Scott. He was shot running away multiple times by a white police officer down there. Now there's a second story emerging about the second officer who had nothing to do with the shooting, but he was the first cop to arrive on the scene after the shooting, and he is a black guy, and he's taking a lot of heat because he did not do enough, people are claiming, to try to help Mr. Scott. Was not seen performing CPR. The two guys were just standing kind of around there and not doing enough. What do you make of this, Emmett?
Well, I think the big issue here, we have Officer Habersham, 37-year-old African-American male, as you described. After the account, after the video came, there was an account that he said that he was doing CPR on Mr. Scott, and that he was instrumental in leading the medical workers to the body. And of course, there's no visual signs of that on the video. And so there's a number of issues here. One, did he lie? I'm not sure we have enough information to know that. But two, is there a double standard? Right, because we were quick to throw Officer Slager under the bus to say, you know, and he was accused of murder and indicted and whatnot. And now you have this kind of wishy-washy situation where Habersham has not been indicted, but yet he's getting a lot of ridicule. And so for me, you know, no matter what happened, I'm concerned about him.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's why, like I said, the other slogan that needs to go along with Black Lives Matter is how cops respond, largely because it makes us look at this issue in a much broader, from a much broader lens, which is the culture of policing in America. And interestingly enough, not enough information is really done, well, I should say investigation done in terms of the pressure that cops of color have to endure being in predominantly white forces, because a lot of times they'll go along to just get along.
Yeah.
So they will be equally as problematic as white officers. And the interesting thing, I should say, is that places like Boston, particularly when we look at towns like Chelsea and Roxbury, we still have a sort of predominantly white police force. A place that we don't have one, believe it or not, People's Republic of Cambridge. We have the most diverse police police force really in the state. Some have said even in the country. But interestingly enough, you have the same sort of problems around implicit bias because we had the not only Skip Gate case, but we've had many other cases like Skip Gate where blacks are over-policed or not just in Area 4, but in other parts of Cambridge.
Well, by the way, we can get back to Boston in a second because I think that Evans, based on the data that I've seen, has done more to promote people of color in the top his command staff than clearly than anybody before him. But the Minority Police Officers Association surely doesn't agree. I think this situation with Habersham, based on how I read, is disgusting. If this guy were a white guy, if this were a white cop, I don't know if he'd be indicted, but there should be unanimity of condemnation by organizations of black Americans, half of whom are saying the evidence isn't in. Well, they're saying the evidence isn't in on Slager. I mean, the video shows, as you say, Emmett, is in total contradiction to what he says about doing CPR. It doesn't prove, as some are suggesting, that he just stood there while people think that Slager planted that taser, because no one is 100% sure it was a taser, even though it looks like it. But it shows that he was lying.
Well, I'm concerned about
critical part of this.
Though,
why aren't people from Sharpton on down saying, we want this guy indicted just like Slager?
It should have started with Eric Gardner, if you recall, because after he was down, a black
that
female
is correct.
Police
that
officer,
is correct.
And nobody said anything. So there's a certain kind of silence around this issue, and I don't know how much of it is because the constraints that they feel under or basically the way in which we just spin this story.
It's an unhealthy double standard.
All right.
Well, I think there's also, as you mentioned before, Irene, this big, you know, culture of shut up about your fellow officers. What do they call it? The thin blue line or whatever it is. I mean, coming back to movies that I saw when I was a little kid, like Serpico, about, you know, nothing to do with race. It had about somebody telling on some nefarious deeds going on in the police department. So you get this sense in a lot of these situations, black, white, no matter what you are, shut up about your fellow officers, and that's not a healthy situation.
And that's, and interestingly enough, that can be in any workplace, pretty much.
Yeah,
it's about being part of the team.
By the way, I have to make a correction. I criticized, because this is part of what I do, Al Sharpton. I'm not a fan of his at all. Actually, Sharpton is amongst those African-American leaders who are criticizing the actions of Officer Habersham, along with the National Bar Association, mostly an African-American legal group. But on the flip side, and so my apologies to Reverend Al there, here's Charles Wilson, chair of the National Association of Black Law Enforcement Officers. He is on the campus police force at Rhode Island College in Providence. He says it is way too early to make any judgments about Officer Habersham's conduct. No, it's not. There's no evidence that corroborates the public statements Habersham has made.
Yes,
you know what's most troubling? I know this is not an original thought. You say to yourself, Habersham lied. Mm-hmm. Slager lied.
Yeah.
If it turns out, a total lies on both their parts. Video is everything.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no question we would never have heard of Walter Scott. We would never be looking into this. There'd be complete either complicity or agreement or cover. It is so, if it doesn't open the minds of Americans around this country about all of the cases where there isn't video, and again, I know it's been said 1,000 times in the last month, then you're fooling yourself.
Yeah, and then it becomes complex. It's very complex because even as we're talking about this particular incident, a new incident just recently happened with Freddie Gray, a 25-year-old who died just yesterday. He was arrested by a police officer in Baltimore who broke his spine in several places, and he died due to his injuries and stuff. So, you know, there's always the over-policing, and we say, well, we want more cops on the force. And my point is that I don't care how many cops of color we get. If you don't change the culture, you're not changing anything.
Well, let's get back to Boston, because Jim did mention before, and you guys mentioning it, Irene was anyway, that there was this Roxbury Foreman Community Policing, and the guy that runs the Massachusetts Association of Minority Law Enforcement Officers blasted Bill Evans, the commissioner of police in Boston, for saying there are not enough men and women of color on the police force. That's President Larry Ellison. When we had Evans in here last week, he was talking about one of the difficulties is veterans' preference deal, and that
under the civil service, right?
Yes, and that because I was surprised this because there's an awful lot of black guys that, and women that serve in the armed forces, but apparently a lot of these veterans were white, mm-hmm. which meant they got preference because they were veterans. That had been one of the problems. But he has promoted people into leadership positions. So it seems to me he has done a pretty good job so far. What do you think, Emmett?
Well, I mean, you know, I'm a fan of the commissioner. And I also know Larry very well, and I'm actually a fan of the work that he's doing as well. What the commissioner has done in a very quick amount of time has made progress.
Yeah.
He's gone to 3 captains of color where there were previously none.
Yeah, that's right.
But progress does not mean that we've reached the goal. And so I think that we do need to give him credit for having the courage to change the tide and to actually make
and the culture
and be yeah. very consistent about his approach to doing it. But the conversation needs to continue, yeah. right? Because 3 in the higher ranks is not enough when you have a gap in the middle.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, but Ellison, head of the minority association, the Mass Association of Minority Law Enforcement Officers, is not just saying, Emmett Price, that we've made some progress and more needs to be made. Quote, and this is the Boston Herald, we still have a lot of the same obstructions from the Davis, meaning Ed Davis administration, to the current administration. And that simply is, I mean, what you say is, I think, a fair statement. What Ellison seems to be saying is not a reflection of the changing reality in the first year and a few months of Evans and Walsh. Is it or is it?
Well, no, I'm not going to defend, Larry's agenda. I think Larry clearly has an agenda. And I think
In the macro,
it's a good one. In the micro, I think it may be a little, hyper-political. And these guys, meaning Larry and the commissioner, know each other for many, many decades. I mean, they've worked closely hand in hand. And so there's some, internal stuff there. I think, there's a number that they recruited 2,000 applicants and 53% of those applicants were of color. I think that's great. The question is, how do you deal with the veterans? How do you deal with some of these other systematic, mechanisms that are in place?
So that's why I think that's why Larry, even if his agenda is political, it needs to be to sort of keep his foot on the pedal on this issue. I mean, you got to understand that this was a police force that has always been predominantly white. And so even though we have 3 blacks in key positions and a few others here and there and it's becoming more diverse, you really do need people in key positions to really change this kind of culture.
I think it's the first part of a sentence should be, yes, there has been progress in the whatever it is, 14 months or whatever that Evans has been here. However, as Emmett put it, this is simply not enough. Okay. You got to do a lot more. I don't know how you say Evans and Ellison have had a long relationship. I'm sure they have because they've both been around a long time. But if you want to work with somebody and they do something good, I don't care what the forum
I'd
is.
I agree. Okay.
You got them a little bit of credit for the good before you focus on the not good enough.
I agree. But the very interesting thing, and I'm sort of a little fatigued by this, is that every time a cop does something that he should be doing, we applaud them. And I just think that that's ridiculous. You're doing the right thing. You should be doing the right thing.
Yeah, but they haven't done it for ages here. And so it's not just the typical thing. It's an aberrational good thing, is I guess what I'm saying. In any case, okay. Here is a little musical quiz for the two of you, because I think, actually, I want to get you in a better mindset on Marathon
okay.
and Patriots
okay.
Day. We want you to listen to the song.
Okay.
And then as soon as you hear it, whoever knows why we're playing it has to raise their hand and they will be recognized. You ready, Emmett Price?
I'm Irene here. Monroe?
No, don't raise your hand yet, Irene. Here is the song. Go ahead.
Cannot be silenced. It never has. It never will. Let justice roll like
no
a river.
No hands are up yet.
From the oceans to the hills.
Oh,
well,
my
okay,
goodness.
Irene, we don't want you to sing it. We just want to. It is called Love Cannot Be Silenced. Why are we playing that either Irene or Emmett? Does anybody know?
Because my love is passionate.
Well, maybe it is, but that would be wrong.
Hot.
Well, it may be right, but that isn't the answer. That is, we don't know her name, but she is a folk singing sister in Chicago. She is singing, of course, that great song she wrote, Love Cannot Be Silenced.
I don't know if I go that far.
It is
great song.
It is in support of the leadership conference of women religious. And why would she be singing? What's the relevance of that? Because the Pope, as I think you probably know, some think in anticipation of his visit to the U.S., as the headline in the New York Times says, ends battle with U.S. Catholic nuns group. By the way, a group that represents roughly 80% of the nuns in the United States. Well, we won't start with you, Irene.
Well, it's an amen moment.
Amen. What would you say? First of all, rate the song. You know a little bit about music, we're told.
Oh, my goodness.
And two, a comment on the Pope's behavior,
That song is a zero. We just really need to – I couldn't even get my groove on that one.
With you on that one,
the power of the song is in the lyric. The lyric is powerful. So let's give it a 3.5.
Thank you.
And I think this is a historic moment again because
can he finish his sentence, please? Go ahead.
Glass half full kind of guy.
It shows that the current Pope is not held hostage to some of Benedict XVI's antics.
Benedict was upset because they weren't spending enough time, these nuns, on things like abortion and gay marriage. They were focusing on poor people. They actually had some speakers who didn't agree with church doctrine. And now, essentially, this current Pope is saying, pull back, let them do their work.
Let them be. Let them be.
So what do you, Irene, you're not going to give him credit for this either?
Oh, no. I give him a little bit of credit. Okay. I mean, considering that the Catholic Church either likes our nuns to be flying nuns or singing nuns. So, I mean, considering that they can be working nuns and be compensated for it, not in terms of, monetarily, but in terms of, congratulations or praise from the Pope, it says a lot of things because they run the churches, they run the schools, they run the hospitals, they run the charities. It's a dying institution. So he really understands, particularly in the United States, that if he doesn't do something on this issue, we will continue to lose them, because the only countries that where nuns are really growing in number is Asia and Africa. And one of the reasons why the nuns are leaving, I mean, when the average age is 65, come on now.
Is that the average age of American nuns? 65?
And those old nuns are still working. Yeah. Are still working until they drop.
They got to pay the bills.
And younger women who have an interest in religious life said one of the reasons they won't do it is because of that song we just heard.
Speaking of that song, can we please hear,
can we please hear
Love Cannot Be Silenced in the background as Irene?
The young nuns that are joining are ultra-conservatives.
That's right. They absolutely.
Now, Irene, before you go, I know you wanted to read this. Could you do me a favor? What is this name right there?
It says Browdy.
Okay, don't go away. And what is that time right there?
Oh, you really?
What time does that say?
That is 3:39:50.
Thank you very much.
Absolutely. I beat him. I want to know, but he doesn't believe me.
Before you go, could you read Marjorie's time from the Lake Champlain race?
I don't have mine.
You don't have yours. Okay, fine.
I came in third, though, Irene.
Okay, fine.
I'm not nearly as fast as you, though.
By the way, I forgot to tell you, you came in third. I won the Olympics in 1994, wherever it was. I forgot to tell you that.
Okay.
Emmett, it's great to see you, Irene. Thanks for the gifts and the photos and the swag.
Go out and run now.
You are
unbelievable. Now.
Maybe a little later.
Look at these guys in the pouring rain. They're inspired. They're out there and they're running out.
Great to see you both. Thanks, everybody.
Okay. The Reverend Irene Monroe, is a syndicated religious columnist. She's a glass half empty kind of gal. Reverend Emmett Price, Mr. Glass Half Full, professor of music at Northeastern University. But Irene did bring us presents. His latest book is The Black Church and Hip Hop Culture Toward Bridging the Generational Divide. Thank you guys both for coming in. Up next, our TV expert, Bob Thompson, joins us for his best and worst moments of television this week. That and more with Bob Thompson next on 89.7 WGBH Boston Public Radio.